Ben.
And I'm Julia.
And together, we are functionally literate.
We sure are.
Today, we are getting started on The Obelisk Gate.
Yay!
It's by N.K. Jemisin. It is book two of the Broken Earth trilogy. Julia and I really enjoyed the first one, so we're moving on to the second one. This book also won a Hugo Award.
She just has stacks on stacks of Hugo Awards.
Yeah, no, the whole trilogy won a Hugo Award each.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I can see why.
Yeah.
You know.
100%. Not far into this book so far. I mean, we're just doing the first three chapters in this episode.
Yes.
But I will say that I'm like, not, and I loved the first book, but I'm like really, really enjoying this. Questionably, yeah. Like more than the first. Already.
I could see why. I agree. And we'll probably get into why in this episode. And certainly in the next one. We're recording two episodes today for posterity. For posterity, it's January 15th, 2024.
Yes.
And it's fucking freezing.
It's 0 degrees outside, literally.
It's like -8 Fahrenheit. Right
yeah.
Now. And Julia, out of the kindness of her heart, brought blankets. So we're very nice and cozy in the Vidwest studios today.
And Chris has a hat on.
Yes.
To stay warm.
Our audio recordist, Chris, he's got his hat on. He says that's all he needs as long as his head and his ears are warm. Much like George Costanza, he will be fine.
I love it.
Thanks to Vidwest Studios for letting us use the recording space. Thank you, Julia, for being my co-host.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
Thank you, Jake Weller, for doing our music. As always, we love your music. If you like the music that you heard in this episode and all of our episodes, all done by Jake Weller, check out his album, Wasting Time. That's on Spotify, probably other places too, but I've got a Spotify link in the comments. I mean, in the description. Thank you, Chris, for being our audio recordist. For the second to last time, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Chris is going to be moving on to his own project soon, which we'll be talking about when that kicks off. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into it. Chapter 1.
Nassoon on the Rocks, in which a little girl witnesses her brother dead by her father's hands and is spared his wrath for love of her.
So, yeah, this book kind of just jumps right back into things.
It does. And it's interesting because you're going back in time, but you're going to the perspective of
Nassoon's
daughter.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because, you know, in the first book, minus the prologue, this is like how it started.
Yeah. So this is what I think is the most interesting about this chapter, because literally the whole last book, we were like, what happened? How did it happen? Why did it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Chapter one of this book, it's like, here you go. Here's the information. Here's why he did it.
Oh, my God. I know. And it, like, to get the answer that you know, not that it was, like, driving me crazy to know. Like, I figured, you know, okay, he killed his son because he's a bigot and, you know, whatever. But, like, to, like, hear how it actually plays out, it's distressing.
Yeah, yeah. So, Aesun, she, not Aesun, Nassoon, she wants to get out of town. She's trying to get away from her mom.
She wants to be a lorist.
She wants to be a lorist so she can get away from her mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, she, not knowing any better, because she's 8, she uses her powers to get a diamond. And then gives it to Renthri, the lorist that she approaches. And she's like, I want to be a lorist. And and Renthri is like, what the fuck?
Where did this child get a diamond?
Right.
I cannot accept this gift.
But so she humors the kid and, you know, tells a bunch of stories. But then, yes, that night concludes, I can't keep this.
Yeah.
I can't. So she, Renthri asks around, figures out who this girl's parents are, goes to her house and gives Jija's dad's name.
Yep.
Jija, Renthri goes to Jija and tells him everything that's up and hands him the diamond. And he's like, this is really fucking weird. He's gracious about it, but then like privately, he's like stewing about it.
Something ain't right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like Hoa, because we know that Hoa is the narrator now.
Right.
Which, oh yeah, hold on, time out for a second. Hey, if you're like, for some reason, this is like your first episode of Functionally Illiterate, mm-hmm. that's weird. I hope you read the book and you'll be able to follow along. If not, hey, there's a whole other book, the fifth season. You should totally go and read that book right now. And then get back to us.
This would be filled with spoilers.
Yes. Spoilers abound for book one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Time in. Hoa is telling us that Jija would have figured it out anyways.
Yeah.
He was like, this is very important. He would have figured it out eventually. Mm-hmm. But if you want, like, one thing to point to that, like, made him do it, this would be it. It started with the diamond. Don't tell Nasun that when you find her. She doesn't know. She doesn't need to know.
Hoa, always protecting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine being told that.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss. Yeah. And I think that fits the situation.
Genuinely. Mm-hmm. Genuinely. But yeah, so Jija does the thing. You know, he kills Uche.
Well, because Uche realizes that he has the diamond in his pocket.
Yeah. He without, like, through his powers, he knows something that no normal child
He's
would
know. He's like, what you got in there, Daddy?
Why shiny in pocket, Daddy?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then he just fucking goes into a rage and bludgeons the kid to death.
Insane.
Just insane.
Insane. Yeah. And just, I don't know. I'm like, I try to wrap my brain around this, like, reaction, which.
I don't know, man. I'm shrugging. I don't know. Like, it's. He lives in a society that is deeply prejudiced against Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone fears them.
Right.
I don't know what a person could be told or believe about Origins that it would drive you to kill your own toddler.
And like it being an instant reaction, like almost just like.
I mean, I think it was sheer rage.
Yeah.
Honestly, because, you know, he had a different reaction with Nasun.
Well, and it's interesting it being in the very first chapter, too, because, you know, throughout the first book, you're told time and time again, okay, this is what people feel about Origin and, like, how terrible they are. And, you know, you're picking this book up, and then it's just, like, getting hit in the head again with a hammer, being like, do not forget that this is how people feel about.
Yeah.
It's just like an immediate, you know?
It's like, oh, yeah. Hey, remember this thing that happened?
Yeah.
It happened. It happened.
It's horrible.
Yeah. So yeah, he beats his son to death. Mm-hmm. And Nasun comes home, like, immediately after the deed is done. Like, he is still standing over the kid.
Yeah.
And she is just not processing it.
She's like.
She's not allowing herself to process it. You know, and like she doesn't know what's going on. And he's like, are you one of them? And she's like, yes. But she doesn't know what she's saying yes to because she's shocked.
But don't they mention something about, like, realizing her saying yes to him in that moment, like, saves her life?
Yes.
Yeah.
It absolutely does, because she's just, like, honest about it.
Yeah.
And. Gosh, it's just so.
It's like him
sad.
Being lied to by Aesun. Like, all of this, like, her telling the truth in that moment is what saved her.
Yeah. And so she goes over to him and, like, puts her head on, like, you know, his torso.
Yeah.
And then, like, that kind of helps
to remind him that she's his
daddy's little girl. Yeah. And he does this thing that I thought was, like, an interesting, like, tidbit, basically. Like, he puts his fingers on, like, the nape of her neck, and that helps calm her down.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because that's where the Sesapina is.
Yeah.
And so, like, when he does that, she can, like, assess him more fully.
Uh-huh.
And it's always calmed her down. She's never known why. None of them's ever known why. But that is why.
Right.
It's like, thanks, Hoa, for that information. There's also a bit of information about lorists in this chapter early on when we're talking about Renthri. Because it's really, like, I thought that was interesting, too. It's like, Renthri's role in this story is very small, mm-hmm. but it's pivotal. And that's why I mention it. It's like, oh, okay. And so now that Gigi's calmed down a bit, he's like, pack your things. We're going to go. I'm going to take you somewhere where you'll be better, where you can be my little girl again.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's okay to go because she just doesn't want to be with her mom.
Like, she straight up asks, is mommy coming too? And he says no. And she's like, okay. That's all she needed. Just like, okay, we're getting away from mom. Great.
Do we are we told how old she is?
I'm pretty sure she's 8. I'm pretty sure Hoa straight up says, like...
Because I can't remember that.
Well, so as I recall, Renthri was like, I cannot accept the diamond from a little kid that wants to be a lorist who's almost definitely going to change her mind about what she wants to be in a week.
Yeah.
And Hoa's like, to be fair, she's right. Like, a week or two ago, she's 8. She wanted to be something else like a week or two ago.
Okay. So she's just a baby.
She's just a baby.
Yeah, just a baby. Little baby.
Little baby. But yeah,
that's chapter one.
So that's how the chapter ends, with them like packing and leaving. And then there's a little end blurb. There's like at the end of most of these chapters, there's something at the end of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is, in the days of Jamaria, who died in the season of drowned desert, it was thought that giving the last born to the sea would keep it from coming ashore and taking the rest. This is from The Breeder's Stand, which is a lorist tale recorded in the Honnel Quartet, which is the western coastals near Brokoff Peninsula. It is apocryphal, which means that it's not like accepted stone lore.
What do you think this means?
What do I think this means?
Tell me.
Giving the last born to the sea would keep it from coming ashore and taking the rest. This seems like a thing about like evil earth again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, give the sea your last born child and the earth, or the ocean rather, won't take your whole family.
Yeah.
Maybe
applied to, but not in this way, like thinking about Nasun and Uche.
Yeah. Killed. Uche would have been the last born.
Right.
That's a point. Yeah. And then make that connection. But I did jot down info about the season of Drowned Desert.
Okay.
So this book, like the last book, has the same two appendixes at the end. So it's got like all of the definitions that you would need to understand what shit is. And then also like that appendix about all of the seasons that this society has like recorded and like it's in living history memory. So the season of Drowned Desert and the eggshell season, it is a fifth season that supposedly happened like 25,000 years ago, not mentioned in the appendix of seasons.
Okay.
The earliest recorded season in the appendix is the twin season, which occurred approximately 12 and a half years before the events of the trilogy. So why did I write that down? Oh, both of these seasons, the season of the Drowned Desert and the eggshell season was mentioned in the chapter itself because the eggshell season apparently like the lorist people, the original lorist people, like their bones got brittle because of the eggshell season. And so like they always had this reputation of being like brittle boned people, like well after the fact.
Interesting.
Yeah.
An eggshell, brittle eggshell, brittle bones.
Yeah. Anyways, so that sucked. That was real sad. Let's move on to chapter two.
Yep.
You continued. Picking up where the story left off, you were tasked to summon an obelisk and succeed. Also, you attend an advisory meeting.
So, Alabaster wants to know if we'd ever heard of a moon, which was a really dope way to end the last book.
Yeah, because that was what I was wondering. I was like, what the hell's a moon? We got one in our, you know, on our planet, but.
So you still don't think this is our planet, do you?
No, I mean, it is. It probably
is. You think it is our planet?
I don't know. I don't know. Because I remember, like, last time, so we said it would make sense because of the, you know, balconies and all these things. But who's to say that another universe out there doesn't exist that has, you know, some of the same infrastructure that we have?
If I'm being honest, I feel like if it was another planet, they would have had a better solution than toilets.
That's fair. They could have thought of something more fun, maybe.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like...
No, it probably is Earth.
I think it's probably Earth.
I think it's probably Earth.
You don't think of it like that, though. You think of this as another world.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I realize that it probably is Earth, but my imagination has it not there.
Yeah. So, this chapter, it picks up where the end of the last book left off, mm-hmm. which is continuing this conversation where, so let's remind ourselves what happened last time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was like, I know why you killed our son, but I'll never forgive you for it.
Yeah.
On and on. And then he's like, tell me, have you ever heard of a moon? And she's like, a what? And he's like, a satellite. What the fuck is a safe light? No, it's a satellite. And he's like, I'm not going to bother to explain this to you. I know that you have someone with you that can explain this to you. It was Tonki.
Yeah.
But he didn't know her name. Right. So he was like, I know that you have someone to explain this to you. So just, like, have her explain it to you later.
Yeah.
He's very critical about, like, how little we know, and then, like, he mm-hmm. starts, like, ripping us a new one about, like, how we were behaved when we were in the fulcrum.
Right.
It was like, always listening to your guardian, blah blah blah, and we're like, hey,
everybody had to.
Yeah.
What choice?
Right.
And except him.
And he knew that, though, like, mm-hmm. when Isun said that, he was like, I'm sorry, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
He's just a little bit not over some of the things that have happened in the past. And you know what? I don't blame him.
I really am curious to know what's been going on with him the past 10 years.
Oh, I know. Like, he doesn't look so good, Ryan.
No, no, he doesn't. So this chapter gets into that a bit. Mm-hmm. It talks about how he is slowly turning to stone.
Yeah.
And how his stone eater friend is eating him.
Literally eating him.
Yeah, like, he has no fingers. I think his left hand or something is missing his left arm is missing the whole hand. And it's just like a stone nub up to, like, the forearm or some shit.
Can you imagine? And I think they maybe talk about this later, that you got your little calm, you know, you're underground, you're chilling, and then this man shows up with a stone eater who is eating him, and he's missing limbs and arms, and you're just like, the fuck?
Yeah, so after this conversation, like, she talks to Lerna about it.
Yeah.
Lerna's the doctor. Lerna explains how, like, yeah, he just showed up in the middle of town one day. So in the middle of town, there is, like, this giant crystal.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, like, this entire underground comm, it's in a gigantic geode.
Yeah.
And some of the crystals in the geode have been hollowed out for people to live in. And some of them have just been sheared off, like, at certain parts. So that way, you know, people can move around or be on top of them. So in the center of the comm is one of these places, like, you can, it's the top of it's been sheared off, and there's steps to get to the top of it, and it's like a town square almost.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he and the stone eater just appear there. They just appear there, and, like, they try to get rid of him, but then he, like, shuts everything down for, like 30 seconds, scared the shit out of everyone. And they were like, okay, you can stay.
Yeah, I know. And it's just this decrepit man. Yeah. Like, you're just like, who does he think he is?
He's a 10 ringer.
Yeah.
And that's what Isun says. She's like, he's a 10 ringer and an asshole. Give him whatever he wants.
I know. I love it. I love it. And now he's just taking their medicine and just sitting there getting eaten by the stone eater. And.
Yeah. And, well, so he...
And doing other things. Quelling shakes or whatever.
Yeah. Well, so her conversation with him, the important thing is like, I need to know if you can summon an obelisk. Because if you can't, I need to find someone else who can, or I need to just do whatever I can myself.
He's totally just trying to like piss her off also, because he knows that she can summon an obelisk, I feel like.
Maybe. I don't know.
He's like, well, I'll find someone else who can do it if you can't do it. Because, like, what incentive does she have? Like, she's trying to find her daughter. Like,
yeah. Although, I feel like at this point, she's kind of losing that drive.
Maybe. That's not as much of
But, yeah. So she...
Motivation.
She goes to... she, you know, she wraps up this conversation with him because, you know, he's tired. And she tells Antimony, which is the stone eater friend, she tells Antimony, like, take good care of him. And she's like, as I would any precious thing.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, what? So, yeah, she talks to Lerna about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lerna and us, we go to see Ika. Ika is the leader of the comm. She's also an origin, although she refers to herself as a Raga, like as a use cast.
Yes, yes.
Which, as I recall, Aesun was very jarred by that.
She
did not like that.
She didn't like it, and I don't think had ever met anyone who referred to themselves like that.
Right. So, they go to Ika's place, and they're waiting outside, and there's like, two people like already waiting outside. And then like Ika comes out and is like, oh good, you're all here, come on in. This episode is brought to you by the Greg Bush for House District 50 campaign. Greg Bush is a registered nurse, nurse's advocate, proud union member, husband, and father who has called Columbia home for 18 years as of this May. I know him from church, and I co-starred with his wife in a Maplewood Barn production last year, The Crucible. She played Tituba. I played Reverend Hale. And now he, Greg, is running for House District 50, which is in Southern Columbia. He worked his way up the ranks at MU Healthcare and put himself through school to become a registered nurse after starting as a janitor in 2006. He's running as an advocate for patients and nurses since he's been on the front lines of watching the outcome of extremist politicians in Jeff City. He has three children, one a graduate, with two children still in Columbia Public Schools. He will be a fierce advocate for public education in Columbia. As a member of a working family, he already has the endorsement of two of the largest unions in Missouri since he's a union member and has been for nearly a decade. Check him out at Greg Bush for House District 50 on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Please consider voting for him in November. And if you can't vote for him because you don't live in House District 50, consider donating to his campaign. I have an Act Blue link that will be included in the episode description. Back to the show. And we're like, I need to talk to you. And he just stares at us like, no. I'm gonna talk to you. You're gonna come in here. Like, she just
meetings in session now.
Yeah, meetings in session now, literally. And like, she just says nothing until we get the hint, like, you're calm, your rules, fine. So we all go in. It's Ika and us and Lerna and Hyarka Leadership Kastrima and Cutter Strongback Kastrima. Although Cutter is actually an origin, he just doesn't acknowledge it.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hyarka makes Aesun nervous because whenever there's a leadership cast person around that isn't actually a leader, it usually causes problems.
Right.
Which I could see that. Like, yeah. If you think your whole job is to be a leader and you're not a leader, probably bristles a bit.
Yeah, what's your purpose then?
Right.
What are you supposed to be doing?
Well, I guess be a strong back, I suppose.
Time to for a job change.
Yeah. How did this conversation go, as you recall it?
Well, they kind of just talk about different things that they're dealing with as the season is going to start and how it's going to like affect things. And they, is this the point where they do a little bit of a cannibalism drop?
They talk about cannibalism
as a last resort, but you know, a possibility.
As I recall, Asun like is thinking about it, but I don't know if it's actually mentioned in this conversation, because it's straight up like an advisory committee meeting, right? And they talk about like the issues that Kestrema is having, like for instance that the water is not hot enough, which Asun is like, that's not a real problem, you have running water, you can take showers, who gives a fuck if it's not warm enough,
right?
And like somebody says like, well, we're a little more accustomed to
then we live in a diamond, okay? We are bougie, we want hot water.
We
only expect the best,
right?
So that's great.
So yeah, we learn, also learn that the hunter use cast has been reestablished, which is a strong indicator of how bad things are or are soon going to get,
right?
Because hunters are a defunct use cast, there's no need for them normally.
We'll change plans.
The
big thing, I mean, like, to me that stuck out in the whole meeting is, you know, Asun's like, you know, being patient. She's like, look, I gotta go upstairs. I gotta try to move an obelisk, or doesn't necessarily share that information.
Asun says that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the meeting, she's like, hey, listen, I've gotta go topside. And because that's why the whole reason they went to Ika in the first place.
Yeah.
Because Asun told Lerna that, told her, like, hey, I need to go topside.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can't do that. No one's allowed to do that, especially new people. Like,
right.
You're not trustworthy yet. And because we saw Alabaster again, we're feeling a bit ornery. Like,
yeah.
Like a bit of cyanide's poking through right now.
Right.
And it's like, Ika can try and stop us. And Lerna's like, hey, why don't we just go talk to her? And not like a confrontation. Let's not.
You're going to join our board of directors. And then we'll talk about what
you want.
Join
the advisory committee. Yeah. And like, I think it's interesting why she joined the advisory committee. Because she and Hoa are like the newest arrivals.
I know.
Which I could kind of see that. Because like, you know, making this about real life for a second.
Sure.
Like, I was on a committee that wrapped up recently because of how new I was. Like, they felt like I had something of value to say. It was an internship committee. Mm-hmm. Like, we had an intern minister at our church, and I was a part of his committee in part because I was so new.
Yeah, you can bring fresh perspective to an environment and new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And a new personality is helpful, too, sometimes to, like, kind of mix things up a little.
Yeah, because everybody else on that committee, other than our intern minister, they were all people that had been members of the church for a long time.
You need new blood.
Gotta have new blood.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Asun's new blood in this case.
And Hoa, too.
Because they have the most current information about what things are like up above.
They've been trekking through it, so they can give them the down low on what's going on.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, we're not sure. I'm looking at my notes now. We're not sure how much new information we can bring. But once we say that, we remember how people from the Equatorials had a sash or something to indicate that they were once upper class. Because that, like, that affected how people approached other people. Like, unless you used to be rich, like, certain people wouldn't approach you.
Right.
Which I just, like...
dumb.
I just really, like, really grinds my gears, honestly. Yeah. Like, this idea that, like, even in the apocalypse where money means nothing, formerly being upper class means something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to, like, if you gotta, like, you gotta rep yourself to, like, hey, I've got this pretty sash. Oh, you've got that ring. You were once upper class too. Let's join up.
Cash is king.
Cash is king.
These people suck always.
Yeah. No,
people suck everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, let's see. There was hot water's not hot enough. There's a shortage of potters.
Oh, no.
There's too many people that can sew. There's not enough meat. Fungus was found in several months worth of grain. That had to be destroyed. And then, yeah, that's when Ika's like, I can't talk about this shit anymore. And then that's when we approach her like, hey,
right.
Hey, I got some shit to do. I got to go topside. And mm-hmm. She's like, what kind of shit? And she was like, origin shit. And like, that was an indicator for some people to leave.
Yeah.
And the learner was like, I'm not fucking leaving. And we don't like that because it's like, he's not a Raga. We don't want to talk to him about it.
And he also, bad blood between the two of them right now.
Well, I mean.
Or it's a tough time, I guess.
I mean, she did destroy his town.
Right. Their relationship is on the fritz.
Yeah. So she does convince Ika to let her go topside, but mm-hmm. Ika insists that she also is going to go topside with her.
She wants to come with.
And so, you know, they do, but like, you know, Aesun's like, listen, you can't do what I'm going to do. And she's like, I'm going to do what I want. And then like she convinces her like, no, you're not, because you will probably kill yourself trying.
And everybody around here.
Yeah. Like, because she's trying to explain, like, what a battery is. Mm-hmm. And Anika's like, I know what a rusting battery is.
Right. a rusting. I love it. The relation, it's so fun because the character interaction between, like, all, like, everyone is always just so good. Mm. Like, it's. Everyone's sassy and has, like, you know, just still a little bit of, like, humor in there. I don't know. It's nice.
Yeah. But yeah, so they go topside, and it's Aesun notices, like, how quickly she got accustomed to Kostrima, even though she hasn't even, like, been there a day yet.
Right.
Right? Like, she, like, you know, things start to get quieter, and then, like, the air starts to taste different in her mouth.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they get, like, also, like, the climb up obviously is a pain in the ass.
Yeah. You know? She said everyone's out of breath but her, because she's been walking miles.
Right. And also Ika. Ika, mm-hmm. like, handles herself second best, which we notice, and we're like, oh, good. You've been staying in shape.
Yeah.
Great. We approve. We approve.
Right.
We love an in-shape leader.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, so we go topside, and we realize we're in a different building, and we're like, oh, of course there would be multiple entrances from the topside, like, abandoned town. Like, why wouldn't there be? So, yeah, she's, like, trying to figure out how to do this. She's, like, trying to remember how she, like, got, like, attached herself to Obelix before, and she was, like, part of it was, like, looking in the direction of it. Yep. So, like, Alabaster's like, summon the topaz,
right,
which is one of the obelisks, but she doesn't summon the topaz, she summons the onyx.
Yes.
Which apparently each obelisk feels different when you like attune to it or whatever, right. And like the onyx was much more foreboding and powerful, and like when she summoned it, like everything around the onyx like boomed.
Yeah.
You know? And then like it started making its way toward her, and she was like, it's gonna take like months for it to get here. So then she looks for the topaz and summons that, and that one's much easier, and she's like, I think Alabaster got this one ready for me.
Right. Which is interesting because he just doesn't realize that she's still so powerful, or maybe doesn't think she was keeping up with her.
Yeah.
Her origin.
Yeah. And so then she and Ika are like talking about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like Ika can sess what she did, but she's not sure what she sessed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very careful about what she says because she doesn't want to talk about it around the still heads.
Right.
Like,
I love that. The still heads.
The stills. Can't talk about this shit with the stills.
It'll freak them out.
Which that also was something I noticed. Lerna referred to people as stills, which really bothered Aesun. Was like, I've never heard him talk like that. He's saying Raga. He's saying stills. And like she has a thought at one point, like, he used to be such a nice boy.
And now he's obsessed with what people can and cannot do. And right. Labels.
Yeah, yeah. But But so the way, so this chapter ends with Hoa is feeling nervous. And
yeah,
is like,
he doesn't like it.
We need to go. It's not safe here. Like, I'm scared. And like, Aesun's like, you're not scared of anything. And he's like, I'm afraid of things that will hurt you.
I know.
He is the sweetest boy.
I love him. I want to protect Hoa at all costs. Even though he's a little bit of a, looks kind of like a freak. Like, he's still sweet.
Yeah. So we go, you know, chapter ends with us going back, all of us going back down below with the intention of talking to Alabaster about what we just did, assuming he doesn't already know.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's chapter two.
And there's an end blurb. I want you to read this one.
Okay. Oh, God. Here we go. Before gather into stable rock for each citizen 1 year supply. 10 rullets. Rullets?
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 I don't know.
10 rullets of grain. Five of... This is a kind of bean. L-G-U-M-E.
Legumes.
Legumes. This is... He did this to embarrass me.
I did not do it to
embarrass
you. No, I'm
just kidding. I'm totally joking. A quarter trade it dry fruit and half store it in tallow, cheese, or preserved flesh. Oh, God. Multiply by each year of life desired. After guard upon stable rock with at least 3 strong-backed souls per cache. 1 to guard the cache. 2 to guard the guard. Tablet 1 on survival, verse 4. Ooh.
So it's literally just instructions on what to do.
Yeah, the flesh of preserved flesh.
Well, I mean, it doesn't specify human flesh.
Okay, but when do you ever refer to, like, a cow meat as cow flesh?
I mean, leather is flesh.
I guess that's true. I went straight to humans and was like, no!
Sure. I think it's interesting, this idea of, like, you need guards to guard the guard, which really just means look at the guard. Like, hey, don't eat the food.
Yeah.
And then realistically, that guard is looking at the other two guards like, hey, don't eat the food.
I'm watching you, who's watching him, who's watching him, and you all better.
I mean, that's why there's 3 of them, right?
Like... Love it.
Oh, gosh. It's... so bleak.
I know.
Anyways, chapter 3.
Shaffa, forgotten. Of the death of this guardian, reborn as something monstrously angry. Also, of the obtaining of his first new grit.
So we get a Shaffa chapter.
We sure
and
do.
And our explanation for that is Shaffa is also you. Or he once was.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's how chapter 1 starts, right? Like, you are Aesun, and you and Cyanite was also all of these people that have influenced her, and Demaya was all of these people that influenced her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you are all of these people.
Yeah.
And you are also Shaffa, or you used to be. He's something else now.
Yeah. Shaffa is not who he once was.
Yeah.
Old Shaffa's dead.
Yeah.
This chapter was nuts.
This chapter was nuts. And it's for reasons that, like, so we're going to be speculating a lot with this chapter, right? Because we learn a lot about guardians in this chapter, right? So it explains what happened to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when Cyanite destroyed the island.
And kills her child.
And kills everyone, really.
Which I just want to point this out
because
I thought it was interesting. Shaffa was saying, like, doesn't she know I would love her son?
As I love her.
And put... him so delicately
into the wire chair. Yeah.
What the fuck, Shaffa?
Shaffa thinks that's the right thing to do.
I know. I know. And that's what it's just, you're like, oh my God.
Just a reminder, guys, the wire chair is what you put a node maintainer in, which is an origine whose, like, brain has been lobotomized.
Yep.
So that way, all they can fucking do is still quakes.
Yep.
So,
they live no life.
Yeah, they don't know.
They're essentially enslaved to the government.
But yeah, so in this moment, like, she attuned to an obelisk, which Shaffa on rep collection should have been like, I should have been more aware of that obelisk. But it never right. occurred to me that she would have actually tried to use one.
Yeah.
And so, like, once she connects to it, she, you know, her powers are supercharged. And she, at that point, can literally control the air.
Yeah.
So, like, she just, like, forces him, like, force pushes him back, mm-hmm. like, out of the, I think they were in a ship at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
Out of the ship, mm-hmm. and, like, one of the other guardians with him, like, isn't so lucky. Like, his head gets sheared off on the mm-hmm. way out, but, like, he just goes flying out, and his body is broken on the rocks in the water,
yep.
and, like, he starts to fall into the water, and he's drowning, and he's gonna die, and he's scared, and that's a bad thing for guardians, mm-hmm. because... So what do you think spoke to him? I have a thought.
I don't know I have no idea what spoke to him. I don't have a hypothesis, so I want to hear what you think.
I think it was Evil Earth. I think Evil Earth fucking spoke to him and was like, if you want to live, I can make that happen. And, like, he was so terrified, he wanted to live, he let it happen, so Evil Earth filled him full of all this power, I'm alleging. Something
literally
filled him full
made
of power.
A deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. So, like, filled him with all of this power, like, he was able to, like, with all this power, his body, like, circumvented, mm-hmm. Like, the traditional, like, oxygen exchange process with his yep. lungs. He was suddenly able to... with his lungs, breathe, like, get the oxygen from the sea salt water.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, like, enough. It was, like, just enough to keep him going, but he could still feel his brain dying, like his brain cells dying while he was doing this, like, trying to get to the surface, which, as mm-hmm. an aside, so I found out about something recently.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this science experiment done sometime this century. Like, someone wanted to know, like, what would happen if, like, you were breathing a fluid that was, like, very oxygen rich?
Uh-huh.
Like, how would that affect you? And they found out. So, like, scientists were able to create this incredibly oxygen rich liquid, and they had people breathe it.
What the fuck?
And so would you like to know what it feels like to breathe, like, breathable water?
Yeah.
It feels like you're drowning.
I would imagine it's
like they
terrible.
Were, like, everybody that did this was like, this felt extremely uncomfortable. It felt like drowning, but not dying.
0 out of 10. Do not recommend.
So that's what happened to Shafa here.
Yeah.
He was still drowning, but then he gets to the surface, and then... with, like, all of this new, like, fount of energy, he literally swims back to shore. Not to the island, to the mainland.
Yeah.
He swims back to the fucking mainland.
Do you know what I thought of when I read that he was, like, swimming back?
Yeah.
Do you remember the SpongeBob movie?
Of course.
Do you know the scene with David Hasselhoff?
Yeah.
Where he is just, like, a solid plank propelling through the water? That's 100% what I visualize. Like, Shafa is just, like, not even moving his arms. He's
just
like,
speedboating yeah. along.
I don't know why.
So, yeah, like, I'm this is, hold on, I'm looking at my notes. No, you're fine, because that's such a good image.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at my notes about, like, what it did to him, right? So, he was able, like,
well,
all
he...
of his essential bones healed. None uh-huh. of the non-essential bones.
Right.
And then he was able to breathe water until he was able to get to the surface.
Right.
But his brain was still dying. It just was slowed, that process. And then the narrative says the man that we knew as Shafa is gone.
Yep.
He is replaced by a man, quote, with a habit of smiling, a warped paternal instinct, and a rage that is not wholly his own, driving everything he does from this point on. Perhaps you will mourn the Shafa who is lost. It's all right if you do. He was part of you once.
It's interesting because, you know, she spent the whole first book building Shafa's character and motivations
yeah. Yeah.
and what drives him,
yeah.
what's important to him. And then at the very beginning of this book is like,
throw all that shit
out the
window. It's
gone. And now he's... I love your hypothesis of evil Earth, because that is now what is going to be motivating him, if you're correct.
If I'm right.
The rest of the book, he's motivated by something that does not necessarily belong to him.
Well, I'm not sure what else it could be. Because they talk about how, like, guardians are children of origins that aren't origins.
Right.
Right? And so they still have, like, that connection to the Earth. And, like, the voice that spoke to him just was so foreboding and evil sounding in my mind.
I knew it was nothing good.
No, no. But yeah, so he makes it to shore, and he has, like, no fucking memory, and this old fisherman finds him. His name is Litz.
Yep.
I liked his name, Litz.
Litz is a good name.
I liked Litz's attitude, too. Like, he's just, like, such an old man. I know. Yeah, I've got children. I've got grandchildren. They're all idiots. This one is kind of smart, though. This one grandchild.
The one that's dumb had all the babies.
And
like...
so I'm hoping that his kids aren't all dumb.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this guy takes him home just, like, being nice, really. Mm-hmm. He's just like, okay.
I'll take care of you.
I'm going to take you home. And so he does.
And he also does, like, say, too, he's like, also, I hate Origine. Like,
oh, yeah.
He's because... not even just scared of them. Like, it's with everybody else.
Yeah.
He hates them.
Yeah, because Litz was like, what happened? And all Shaffa can bring himself to say is Raga.
Yeah.
And that was the only explanation this guy was saying. And he said some, like, slurish bullshit that I don't remember off the top of my head.
He's just spewing hate, this man.
He said, like, something about, like, how I think how evil Earth should have killed them all or something. Or, like, how, like, the stillness should have slaughtered them all by now. Something like
that. Right. Something crazy.
But, yeah, no. So he lets take Shaffa to his home. Shaffa's out of it for a day or two.
He needs
like,
to rest.
Yeah. And so, like, then when he's, like, comes back to himself, comes back to his consciousness, a boy comes to him with his clothes, which is now, like, ruined. You know, salt water, like, it used to be, like, a burgundy outfit.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the salt water, like, just bleached it all.
You can't tell that it's a uniform
the
anymore.
The only way he could tell that it was... like what it was the color was originally supposed to be is because one of the pockets is still burgundy on the inside.
Yeah.
And so the kid noticed that too and straight up asks him, like, are you a guardian? And Shaffa's like, what the hell is that?
I love that. He's like, truly old Shaffa dead. I don't even know what I was before.
What's a guardian?
Who's that?
I don't know. But yeah, he's talking to this kid, Eats. And so Shaffa, you know, he's confused at first, but he's thinking about it and he's like, I must have been a guardian.
Yeah.
Yes.
And things like kind of come back to him in this moment, like as he talks to Eats, like when Eats kind of confides in him that he has this power.
Because Eats is an origin too.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'll take care of you. Little boy.
Yeah. And so then he does that thing that he did a lot in the first book where he touches the nape of Eats's neck, but we get it from his perspective this time.
Yeah.
And like, so he's like, he takes something from Eats and he's tempted to take it all from Eats, but he's like, no, I can't do that. There'll be more later.
Yeah. Like, he's hungry for something.
Right. Because so now that he's like taken in this power,
he needs more.
He's got like this void in him that is constantly hungry for power.
Yeah.
And so he tells Eats, yes, I will take you with me. It won't be safe for you to stay here. And Eats knows this. He's like, great. Absolutely. Awesome. I'm going to go and collect all my things. And so then.
And he's like, talk to my mom for me.
Yeah. And so he does. He goes and talks to mom. He tells mom what's up. And mom is like. Through this conversation, Shaffa's like, this sheep has to die. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But, like, after talking to her, because it never occurred to her that, like, the family would be a threat to him.
Right.
She was just worried that he was a threat to the family.
And it almost pisses Shaffa off a little bit.
Almost.
Like, he's
almost
like, how can you not think about this at all?
Like, how could you not think that they wouldn't want to kill him? Like, do you know your dad?
And it's interesting just because Shaffa was just so confused earlier, but we slowly see parts of like his opinion or what once was form a little bit, but nothing like firm.
It's like the things that were like subconscious thoughts yeah. are still there.
Right.
Like when he's not trying too hard, things do come back right. to him, you know?
Which
like,
is interesting.
It is. Yeah. And so he like does the same thing to her that he did to Eats, only it kills her. He takes the same, like, whatever from her, and then he does that to everyone else.
Shaffa except... hungry for power.
Yeah, so Shaffa just fucking kills everyone. And then he learns, because he, like, when he goes and, like, tries to do the same thing to Litz, Litz fights back. He snaps Litz's neck. He realizes he can't take this power mm-hmm. from a normal people, or, well, from anyone when they're dead. And right. if he tries to take it from normal people, it'll just kill them. He can only yeah. take it from Origins, and they'll still survive.
Right.
Unless he, like, he feeds fully. He's like an energy vampire.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So, I had a question for you.
Okay.
I remember I texted you about this. I was like, here's my question. I want you to jot down this answer because you're going to find out the answer to this question later.
Yeah.
So, what my question was to you at the time was, what do you think it is he's taking? What did you put your answer as?
I actually need to pull this up on my phone because I did write an app for it. Or wrote in my notes app some sort of energy life force.
Yeah. I mean, whatever it is, they need it to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting how Origin seemed to have more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'm like almost thinking of it as like a well or something. Like a normal person's well isn't as deep.
It's very shallow.
Yeah. yeah. Like, and then the Origins, you know, you can pull and you can pull and you can pull from it. But I would assume that there's definitely an end to their
yeah.
well of energy or whatever.
But yeah. So he goes around killing everyone except for Eats's siblings and cousins because he's not a total monster.
Yeah. He's like, those are children.
Yeah. I'm not going to kill children.
Yeah.
Something interesting that I noticed here when he was like going and taking everybody's power
mm-hmm.
was that one of them like had a little more power than the rest and was like, this one could have been an origin, could have been a guardian.
Yeah, so that's interesting about the difference between a guardian and an origin. So do we think that it's maybe like if we're thinking of this well living in the, how do you say it, Sesapine?
Sesapine. Yeah.
Like, maybe it's, like, how developed is everyone's Sesapine? So, like, a Guardian's is, like...
I wonder if...
Developed, but not as developed as right. Origin.
I wonder if Stills even have Sesapine. I bet that would That's be fucking blasphemy to even suggest.
Yeah, you know what? Good point. Good point. Or maybe they have one and it just didn't, like, turn on or kick on or something.
Like an appendix.
Yeah. Exactly. Wait, that's awesome.
So
my Sesapine burst, I need to get it removed. Sorry. Okay.
So when he's done, he goes and meets up with Eats, and Eats is like, did you tell her?
Yep.
And he was like, yeah, I told her. She said that she'll miss you. And he's like, can I go talk to her? And he's like, no, I don't think that would be a good idea.
I think he said something like, it's best to keep these things clean or yeah. something like that.
Yeah, because
like,
in his mind, he's thinking if he saw,
I gotta
kill
him
too.
I don't want to do that. Right. Like,
so yeah. they just leave, and he's like trying to think about where he needs to go. He's forgotten mm-hmm. about the fulcrum, but he believes there's something he has to do in the south. And so, what do yeah. you think that is? What do you think he has to go do?
I'm not qualified to answer this because I read too far.
Fair enough. So this,
I'm
so,
sorry.
No, you're fine. So that's how it ends.
Yeah.
And then there was a little end blurb. This is a quote. This is the last recorded words of Emperor Mutsshati prior to his execution. Don't be fooled. The Guardians are much, much older than old Sanze, and they do not work for us.
They work for evil Earth. Sorry.
No, but I think that makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. this idea that Guardians are, like, several centuries old.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what the impression I'm getting.
Like the cardinal, like, cardinals, or...
What do you mean?
I don't know. I think of them, still as like some sort of leader or like how in religion or in the Catholic Church, I guess, would be the easiest answer here. It's like these people, the top power, top dogs.
Yeah. Except so, they live a normal lifespan. I think the Guardians...
Oh, you think that these are immortal people? You think Shaffa's like centuries old?
I don't think they're immortal. I do think that they have like extended lifespans.
Yeah.
For sure. I think it would explain why they've been able to stay in power for so long the way that they have.
Yeah. That totally would make sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So like, I just, this chapter, it has a lot of implications for just like Guardians.
Right.
Like what the... It raises more questions than it answers.
It totally does. And I think I've wondered about, I mean, Hoa, obviously, for a long time, I wondered about him, but I thought I knew what he was.
You thought there was a connection because of the ice white eyes that Shaffa and him have.
Yes. And so I, like, wondered about that, which, like, you know, answered, okay, he's a Stone Eater, whatever. But, like, still, the connection between all these things is not clear. And Guardians, I had so many questions about, like, where did you come from? How do you have the power that you have? Yeah. How are you different than Origin? Because you have some sort of power, but not power that is seen as violent or...
The fulcrum sticks like an implant in their brain.
Yeah.
And
I thought, are they made or are they born? You know what I mean?
Both.
Yeah.
The fulcrum does something to them when they're discovered.
Mm-hmm.
If not outright kills them.
Which is similar to Origin.
Yeah, for sure.
So interesting, seeing parallels between these different, like...
Yeah. Okay, so that's this episode.
And we did it.
We did it. Bye, guys.
Bye.